Welcome to today's reading of the Midland Reporter Telegram and the Odessa American, read by volunteers and staff. You can hear this program on Recording Library of West Texas Radio and on demand at recordinglibrary.org.
Voter registration challenging at UTPB. The University of Texas Permian Basin Honor Students had their work cut out for them as they tried getting their peers to register to vote on Tuesday. Honor students are sworn in yearly to sign people up to cast ballots. On Tuesday, students sat at tables set up for people to sign up, but there were few takers, and some of the ones that did sign up had to be talked into it. Associate Professor of Arts Chris Stanley said the honors program includes a humanities course, art appreciation, and political science. Stanley and Associate Professor of Political Science Robert Purry teach the courses. The deadline to register for the November 7th election is October the 10th. What we do is smash those together and then stretch them back out so it's all interwoven, Stanley said. It's history, politics, art, so we're following a pathway of human history from the Paleolithic all the way up to contemporary times. Stanley said the voter registration project started after Representative Brooks Landgraf, Republican from Odessa, was elected. The overarching comment was, what's one thing we can do that would be meaningful and impactful from the eyes of a state legislator? And Brooks had said, register people to vote. So we have taken that project and turned it into a module in the class, basically so that when we talk about things like voter rights and voter turnout, these students have firsthand experience with it, Stanley said. The deputy registrars interviewed were all sophomores. Grace Federn said a lot of students don't understand the voting process. She said some students say they'll just worry about it when they're older, like after college. My roommates are eager to fill it out, the voter registration form, that is, so it kind of varies across the board, Federn said. Alejandro Barajas said a lot of people in his generation don't care about voting. Obemami Echi, an international student, is a distinguished observer, said most of the public's opinion about voting is that it may not make a big difference. So what's the point? Most people just give up after a while, Echi said. He added that the attitude makes an impact on younger people and that it causes people to be, quote, ignorant and just not willing to vote, or just not willing to actually participate in any form of election, end quote. That's been kind of an interesting change in the university. When we started the honors program, it was very rare to have international students, and now it's becoming quite common. The engineering program, the nursing program, athletics, have added to that diversity. The hope is that these students that come from all over the world see the way in which we register voters. They see some of the pitfalls, potentially voter apathy. You have conversations about that. For the way we teach in the honors program, it helps because this is an actual experience they're having. When we talk about voter turnout in the United States being low, they can see it, see why it happens and how it starts. Certain groups of people that didn't want to register to vote, why people don't want to register to vote, Stanley said. Brinova Alva, Isabel Franco, and Jacob Loera were registering people in the residence dining hall. Alva said people have just passed by their table. Loera said it's cool for the most part being part of helping people register, but it has been a challenge. For the most part, most of them don't care, really. It seems like they don't care about their right to vote, he said. Alva says she likes voting. Even though it's just your one vote, it will make an impact eventually, she said. Franco said being involved has made her consider what her positions and values are and what I would actually want to advocate for. Daniela Lutin was at a table in the Mesa building courtyard. She said it's necessary to vote. I think that it's necessary. I think we need it, especially problems that we're facing nowadays, Lutin said. Lutin said she was looking forward to voting growing up. I didn't grow up around a political family, but to me it was really important, especially because I'm going into the criminal justice major. So I think I'm in an area where it's a little bit necessary to know more about it, especially with the presidential elections. I was really concerned about not being able to vote on time, whether I should do it or not. So she did it when she turned 18, Lutin said. Kenya Gomez, a senior, and Kaysan Cole, a freshman, registered. Gomez said she is looking forward to casting her ballot. The Book of Mormon to make a stop at WNPAC. It's a musical that's made audiences cheer up with laughter for over a decade, and this week it makes its way to the Permian Basin. This week, Broadway in the Basin kicks off its 2023-24 season with The Book of Mormon. The musical will have two shows, both beginning at 7:30 p.m. on Wednesday and Thursday at the Wagner Noel Performing Arts Center. Tickets for the show can be purchased at tinyurl.com/YA6TVM5A. Written by the creators of South Park, Trey Parker and Max Stone, The Book of Mormon won 9 of its 14 bids at the 2011 Tony Awards. The story in the musical comedy follows two Mormon missionaries, elder-to-be Kevin Price and his friend, Elder Arnold Cunningham, as they attempt to preach the faith to the inhabitants of a remote Ugandan village. However, chaos soon follows as the eager young men are challenged by the lack of interest from the locals, who are distracted by bigger issues such as famine, HIV, AIDS, and oppression by a local warlord whose name we cannot print. Lamont Joel Whitaker plays Mahafa Hatimbi, the village chief in the national tour of the Book of Mormon that will be in Midland this week. I'm super excited, Whitaker said in a phone interview. I'm excited every single time we get to come to Texas. I'm from Miami, Florida, so it reminds me of home with the heat and humidity. I love going to Texas. The theaters are so huge. In the show, Hatimbi is a single father in the village and almost chief of the village. He just wants what he didn't get growing up, Whitaker said. Right now, in the village, there's a lot of oppression and hunger and things like that. He just wants his daughter to have a better life. Whitaker talked about some of the things he enjoyed about playing his character in the show. For him, the best part is making people laugh. I love a moment when I get to sing in the spotlight, Whitaker said. The show is something different for me, and that I get to make people laugh and find different ways to do that throughout the show and tell the story in this outlandish, satirical musical by Trey Parker and Matt Stone. It's great to be a part of this production and making people laugh, and I get to do it every night. In the show, the two main characters meet Hatimbi, who shares with them the daily reality of living in appalling conditions while being ruled by an oppressive general. To make their lives seem better, the villagers repeat a phrase, Hasadiga Mbawa, a song that Whitaker's character sings in the show. That song, basically, is a in-your-face way of telling them that you're not in Kansas anymore, Whitaker said. Like, they need to wake up. And if they think they can come across seas to tell them how to live their lives, well, then they have another thing coming. As for what that title translates to, well, you're going to have to see the musical for yourself. It should be mentioned that this musical production is not for children, as it contains explicit language. It's from the creators of South Park. However, the amount of laughter from the audience has made it worth it for Whitaker and the rest of the cast. "We've gotten a lot of reactions from that part of the show," Whitaker said. "It's the first time where you realize what you're about to get and what you paid tickets for." "It's been amazing to see the fans of South Park," Whitaker said. "It's crazy to see people love this type of theater, and we need more of it. In this tour, specifically, we've been able to go to cities that the Book of Mormon hasn't been to before, so to open this type of theater to as many audience members as possible has been a blessing, and share our humor with the world." While the show may at times appear to be sacrilegious, at least to those not familiar with this type of humor, Whitaker encourages people to have an open mind when seeing it. "To be honest, the show is about faith, but it's not the only thing it's about," Whitaker said. "If you watch the whole show for what it is and can sit through the uncomfortable moments, you can see what it's about. You'll see what we have to go to in order to get to the ending result. It's not just chaos for no reason." Climate change crushes insurers. Americans in disaster-prone areas are running low on options for their insurance providers. Both California, which has been plagued by wildfires, and Florida, at risk for flooding and wind damage, have seen record numbers of policies written with their state-run programs. Citizens Property Insurance of Florida and California's FAIR plan are designed to insure properties when a homeowner is unable to get insurance in the private market. These policies give basic protection and are often funded by a pool of funds collected by all insurers in each of the states. Other states like Louisiana and even less disaster-prone states have seen increases in the number of homeowners on these plans of last resort. Insurers have cited the increase in weather-related catastrophes in the last 10 years. More wildfires, more intense storms, as the reason to pull out of certain markets. Also, insurance companies' costs have risen with the cost of reinsurance. Homeowners' insurance is oftentimes required to get a mortgage, so expensive insurance plans make home ownership more expensive overall. Local news roundup. Twins accused of assaulting mom. Twin brothers were arrested last Thursday afternoon after their mom accused them of assaulting her, one with a knife. According to an Odessa Police Department report, officers responded to a disturbance call at a home in the 1100 block of East 44th Street shortly before 5 p.m. on Thursday. When they arrived, the 35-year-old mother of 17-year-old twins Jazzeron and Jamaron Rogers told them the boys forced their way into her bedroom and Jazzeron threatened to kill her while pointing a knife at her, the report stated. She said Jamaron then forcefully removed a laptop from her, causing her finger to bleed, the report stated. According to the report, Jazzeron admitted to using the knife to open his mother's locked door and demanding money from her while he still had the knife in his hand. Jamaron acknowledged he took the laptop from his mom, the report stated. Jazzeron was arrested on suspicion of aggravated assault with a deadly weapon, a second-degree felony, while Jamaron was arrested on a misdemeanor assault charge. Jazzeron Rogers remained in the Ector County Jail Sunday on a $40,000 surety bond. Jamaron Rogers also remained in custody on a $2,500 surety bond. One killed, one critically injured in Saturday wreck. A 20-year-old Odessa woman was killed, and two other local residents were hurt in a two-vehicle wreck at U.S. 385 and Valencia Street Saturday afternoon. According to the Texas Department of Public Safety, Addison Nicole Palma was traveling south on U.S. 385 in a Hyundai Tucson when she failed to yield the right of way and turned left onto Valencia Street in front of a Dodge Ram 1500, causing the pickup truck to hit her vehicle in the intersection. Palma was pronounced deceased at Medical Center Hospital, and her 22-year-old passenger was taken to the hospital in critical condition. Montessori Mastery continues to evolve. Montessori Mastery School of Odessa continues its evolution, adding a high school student council, considering bringing in first priority and adding student population to the point where they need to expand. The school also has Chromebooks for their high school students this year. Students were using their own personal laptops or their own phones, and there was no consistency in how we could do things and what was happening, said Randy McGuire, who is co-director of Montessori Mastery with his wife, Gloria. Parents stepped up to make the Chromebooks possible. We're just really excited about that. We're accredited. We received our accreditation again for the next 6 years with Cognia. That was a big deal last year, and a lot of work goes into that. It's an oversight group to help make sure that we're doing the right things. We do surveys with it, with our students, with our parents, with our staff. It helps, we think, to make us a better school, McGuire said. Students will be attending the Shakespeare Festival in November at the Globe Theater and taking other field trips designed to make students more well-rounded and prepare them for the next step in life. They planned journeys to the Planetarium at Museum of the Southwest, Angelo State University, Fort Concho, and the Meyer Museum. We try to do at least one field trip a month with our 4th to 8th grade. The lower grades have groups come here. A lot of the museums, like the Petroleum Museum, they'll come to the schools and do them. The Ellen Newell Museum comes once a month and does a special program with them, McGuire said. They also offer theater, dual credit through an agreement with Odessa College, American Sign Language, and Student Council. There are 8 members, 4 officers for the high school, and there's a class representative for each of the grades, McGuire said. An upcoming project is to raise funds for an awning. The school doesn't do MAP or STAR testing, but they give the Stanford test once a year. We're only at $6,000 annually, and we have no hidden costs. We don't charge for textbooks. We don't charge extra for field trips, McGuire said. Other schools in the area cost more, like the cost of going to college. It's a huge sacrifice for parents. But we, again, for us, it's a ministry. We don't have a lot of administrative costs. Gloria and I make what our teachers make, McGuire said. The school is mainly located in St. Andrew Cumberland Presbyterian Church and has portable buildings. Montessori Mastery is not run by the church. It has 137 students this year, and they are maxed out at every grade level. There are 13 full and part-time staff members. We're trying to be affordable and provide a quality education. People have to decide for themselves, but we've been full for years with a waiting list for years. We've got people now that are homeschooling children waiting for openings to develop here. That puts a burden on us because we're like, oh, we wish we had more room. We just don't have more room, McGuire said. He added that if they had more room, they could easily double in size because they always have people who want to work there and the turnover is low. We're doing some things that people see value in, McGuire said. He added that most students go to college locally, but some have gone to Texas Tech or Tarlington State. But that's not something we push. We want to make sure we're teaching to the highest, to the distinguished level of the TEA graduation plan. We have kids go to college that didn't think they wanted to, but everybody's gotten in that's wanted to go. I think we're doing the right things. I hope we are, McGuire said. Students are learning self-discipline, learning to be responsible to prepare them for adulthood, and learning to express themselves. Time management is also built into everything they do. The other thing that we really see is confidence. That's what's really rewarding about this, is seeing the changes in children. Parents thanking us for bringing their children back, restoring their child. And again, we still have parents saying, my child's up ready for school before I'm ready to take them. Before, I couldn't get them to school, and now they want to go, and they're happy. Happiness in life is a big thing, isn't it? We have children with ADD, ADHD, some are on the spectrum, dyslexia. We welcome those challenges, and not that every child has those, but for those that do, they find success here, McGuire said. Students are allowed to be different in how they learn. It's not everybody does the same thing in the same way at the same time. We always stress acceptance and, again, helping to build that self-confidence. We get a lot of children that are damaged. Their self-esteem has been damaged because they didn't pass the test or they didn't fit in, but no one told them how special they were and how unique they were in what they did. Some of these kids on the spectrum are amazing, and to see what happens when they're given a chance to be themselves, not to be judged, to not be criticized, it's like watching a flower bloom, McGuire said.
This is Christy, and I'm continuing to read Odessa American for September 27th, 2023. Tony says, what changes can I make during Medicare's annual enrollment period? By guest contributor, by Tony King. Tony, this is my first Medicare annual enrollment period, and I don't know anything about this process. How do I find out which options are best for me? I have health problems, and I'm concerned about making a change. Which Medicare health plan and prescription drug plan do I choose? Will I have to answer health questions to qualify? Currently, I'm being bombarded by marketing material, and I would really appreciate your help. Thanks, Frank from San Antonio, Texas. Hello, Frank. Medicare annual enrollment period, or AEP, is from October 15th to December 7th, and the Tony Says Medicare team is asked this question at least 20 times a day during Medicare's AEP. I discuss it at length in Chapter 6 of my book, Medicare Survival Guide Advanced Edition. Which Medicare option is right for you depends on your health and financial situation. You may be someone who has a history of serious health issues with expensive brand name prescription drugs, or who goes to the doctor once a year for a physical and takes an inexpensive generic. Take your time and research your options. Below are steps the Tony Says team uses when helping clients during Medicare's AEP. Step 1, decide if you want Original Medicare, Parts A and B, or Medicare Advantage, Part C plan. A, ask your doctor's office which plan is recommended. Most doctors accept Original Medicare, but not all accept Medicare Advantage plans. If you have a doctor that is in a Medicare Advantage plan's provider directory, make sure you call to verify that the office is still accepting that specific Medicare Advantage plan in the upcoming calendar year. B, the main difference between Original Medicare and Medicare Advantage plans is that Original Medicare works only with Medicare, and the Medicare supplement selected pays the deductibles or coinsurances, or you pay if no supplemental policy is selected. Medicare Advantage plans are also called Part C. They are administered by private insurance companies that are approved by Medicare and are primarily HMO and PPO plans. C, when choosing a Medicare Advantage plan, you must use that specific insurance company's card, not your Medicare card. Step 2. Decide if you need to enroll in or change your current Medicare Part D plan during Medicare's annual enrollment period, or AEP. A. If you want Medicare prescription drug coverage to go along with Original Medicare, then you must enroll in a standalone Medicare Part D plan, and there is a monthly premium. B. If you choose a Medicare Advantage plan, make sure that the plan has Medicare Part D prescription drug coverage included to keep from receiving a Medicare Part D penalty for not enrolling in a Medicare prescription drug plan. C. Verify that all your prescriptions, both brand name and generic, are covered. Step 3. Remember, you have from October 15th to December 7th to change your Medicare Advantage plan or standalone Medicare Part D plan to begin January 1st. A. If you miss the December 7th deadline, you will have to wait until the next year's Medicare Annual Enrollment Period, or AEP. B. Medicare's AEP is only for enrolling or changing Medicare Advantage Prescription Drug Plan, MAPD, or Medicare Part D plans. You can change your Medicare Supplement, Long-Term Care, or Dental plans any time of the year. C. Verify your brand name and or generic prescriptions are also in the specific MAPD or Medicare Part D formulary. Take your time during Medicare's AEP to explore your Medicare options. Call the Tony Says Medicare hotline at 832-519-8664 or email info@tonysays.com for assistance with Medicare issues. Tony's books are available at tonysays.com with a bundle discount for Tony Says readers. This is Christy, and I'll be reading Permian Proud for September 27th, 2023 by staff report. Midland ISD, MISD high school students can get a jump start on their career in the fire service thanks to the relatively new Fire Academy, a dual credit program providing firefighter and EMT training and certifications at Midland College. The program, a partnership with the college and City of Midland, provides students with hands-on training over the course of their junior and senior years. They get the same training as our adult students, said Captain Ryan Collier, Associate Professor of Emergency Medical Services and Fire Science Technology at Midland College. They also get the same certifications, which gets them ready for jobs in firefighting once they graduate high school. The program has existed since 2021. Two members of the first graduating class went on to work at the Midland Fire Department, according to MISD. To see my students join us at MFD, that's definitely a proud dad moment for me, Collier said. We always need firefighters, and our hope is to have more students stay in Midland and join our local fire department. MFD Chief Charles Blumenauer called the program a win-win for the community. It allows the Midland Fire Department to have a larger local pool of candidates, and graduates can begin a great career right out of high school, he said. According to MISD, the Fire Academy teaches more technical skills than firefighting and preps students to take the Emergency Medical Technician Basic Certification Exam after they've received their high school diploma. The Midland Fire Department requires all firefighters to be EMT certified.
Obituaries: Harold Eugene Butch Tacker, age 74, of Brady, Texas, passed away on September the 24th. Visitation will be on September the 27th, 6 to 8 p.m. at American Heritage Funeral Home, 4100 North FM 1788, Midland, Texas. The celebration of life will be on September the 28th at 10 a.m., also at the American Heritage Funeral Home. Burial service to follow at American Heritage Cemetery. Bonnie Easter Singleton, age 98, of Duncanville, Texas, passed away on Friday, September the 22nd. The Singleton family will receive friends for visitation on Saturday, September the 30th, from 1 to 2 p.m. at Nolan Anders Funeral Home. Chapel funeral services will begin at 2 p.m. with Brother Tim Denhay officiating. Bonnie will be laid to rest beside her husband in DeLon Cemetery. If desired, memorial contributions may be made to De Leon First Baptist Church in memory of Bonnie. Jose Guadalupe Sotillo passed away on Thursday, September the 21st. Visitation will be 1 p.m. to 9 p.m. and rosary at 7 p.m. on Thursday, September the 28th at Martinez Funeral Home. Funeral services will be held at 1 p.m. on Friday, September the 29th. at St. Joseph's Catholic Church. Burial will follow at Ector County Cemetery at Rose Hill Garden. Arrangements are by Martinez Funeral Home. Ruby Mae Ellis Stone, age 92, of Odessa, passed away on Wednesday, September the 13th. A public visitation for Ruby will be held Friday, September the 29th, from 6 p.m. to 9 p.m. at Frank W. Wilson Funeral Directors, 4635 Oak Wood Drive, Odessa. A funeral service will occur Saturday, September the 30th, at 10 a.m. at 4635 Oakwood Drive, Odessa. A burial will occur Saturday, September the 30th at 3:30 p.m. at Englewood Slayton Cemetery, 1100 North 20th Street in Slayton, Texas. Philip Robert Ethan Good of Odessa, age 33, died Saturday, September the 23rd. Memorial service will be held at 2 p.m. Friday, September the 29th, at Acres West Funeral Chapel. Tommy James Morris Sr., age 79, of Odessa, died Saturday, September the 16th. Funeral service will be held at 1 p.m. September the 30th, Blackshear Elementary Prisella Whitaker Auditorium. Burial will follow at Sunset Memorial Gardens. Lillian Reed, age 83, of Odessa, died Wednesday, September the 20th. Graveside service was held at 11 a.m. on September the 23rd. Nelda Craig Thomas, age 83, of Odessa, died Friday, September the 22nd. Funeral service will be held at 10:30 a.m. September the 28th at 2023 Crossroads Fellowship Church. Burial will follow at Sunset Memorial Gardens. James William Burke passed away on September the 18th. A memorial service will be held at First Baptist Church at 700 North Lee in Odessa at 10 a.m. on September the 28th in the Worship Center. Gloria Ann Hearn, age 69, of Andrews, Texas, passed away on September the 9th in Houston. Memorial services will be held September the 30th at Mount Olive Baptist Church, 1800 East 11th Street in Austin. Diana Edmiston, age 82, of Odessa, passed away on September the 23rd. Funeral services will be held at Sunset Memorial Funeral Home on Wednesday, September the 27th at 1 p.m. Addison Nicole Palma, age 20, of Odessa, passed away on September the 23rd. A visitation will be held from 11 a.m. to 9 p.m. on September the 28th at Odessa Funeral Home, with burial to follow at Sunset Memorial Garden on Friday, September the 29th. A rosary will be held at 7 p.m. on September the 28th.
This is Christy, and I'll be reading Permian Proud for September 26, 2023. Permian Proud partners with Recording Library of West Texas by Mike Aldex. Permian Proud is elated to announce a new partnership with the Recording Library of West Texas that will help spread our news across the region and beyond in audio format. The Recording Library is among the region's longest-running active nonprofits, providing free, high-quality audio to those with visual, learning, or physical impairments since 1963. The organization serves up a wide variety of printed materials in audio format, from audiobooks to news publications, and information on important community resources. It's important for us to deliver accurate news and provide a sense of community to our clients. The Recording Library runs a 24-hour radio station, RLWT Radio, and also produces podcasts that provide resources targeted to its listeners, as well as a platform for local nonprofits to share their news and information. Anyone who can't read the printed word qualifies for our services, Executive Director Bailey Hennis said. In addition to the visually impaired, clients of the recording library can include people with Parkinson's who can't hold a book or newspaper, or someone with learning disorders like dyslexia. It's important for us to deliver accurate news and provide a sense of community to our clients, Hennis said. Volunteers show up to the recording library studio in the morning to record versions of articles from the Midland Reporter-Telegram and the Odessa American. Those news reports air at 2 p.m. or 3 p.m. that same day. Permian Proud is honored to be selected as the recording library's newest offering of local news and information. We share the nonprofit's vision of creating a sense of community by connecting residents across the region to reliable news and information. The large reception of our stories have received confirms. There is a strong desire for this resource. Thank you for reading, but if listening is more your thing, make sure to visit the recording library's website here. Also, at the bottom of every one of our stories, we will provide a link to the Recording Library's audio reports. Please spread the news about this great service so that more community members in need can get connected. Eclipse Day to bring astronaut activities to Blakemore Planetarium, September 26, 2023, by staff report. Eclipse Day at Blakemore Planetarium will involve more than simply gazing up at the sky with protective viewing glasses. In fact, astronaut John Harrington will be on hand Saturday, October 14th, to speak at Blakemore Planetarium at the Museum of the Southwest, located at 1800 West Indiana Avenue. His talks will occur following the eclipse at 1 p.m. and 3 p.m. Visitors will enjoy activities with Midland College, New Minds Enrichment, McDonald Observatory staff, and many more. The event is presented by Chevron. In Midland, the last annular eclipse of the century is scheduled to begin at 10:18 a.m. and last 3 hours, 3 minutes, with maximum coverage being viewed around 11:45 a.m. Do you have viewers? Stop by the Blakemore Planetarium now to purchase your viewing glasses before they are gone. Major Gaming Expo coming to Horseshoe Arena this weekend, September 26, 2023, by staff report. Gamers from across West Texas and beyond are set to experience the Ultimate Gaming Expo in Midland this weekend. Urgent Fury, Patriot Games, Unified Esports Association, and Double Dave's have joined forces to bring the first ever Texas Battle Bowl Esports and Gaming Expo to the Horseshoe Arena in Midland from Friday, September 29th through Saturday, October 1st. The event will feature tournaments, giveaways, and interactive experiences for gamers of all ages. Included are console and PC gaming tournaments, tabletop tournaments, and open gaming, according to organizers. This event has been a dream to launch in West Texas, said Urgent Fury director Shane Bell. Normally, a gamer has to go to other cities like Dallas, San Antonio, Austin, or Houston to experience an event on this scale. Attendees of the Texas Battle Bowl will have a chance to make a difference in the local community by participating in Rescue Royale, during which players and spectators can make contributions to tournaments to boost the prize pool. 50% of the contributions will go directly to the American Red Cross. Rescue Royale is a month-long fundraising event for the Red Cross. We are excited to bring a gaming expo to West Texas that is both fun and philanthropic, said Patriot Games owner David Edwards. This is an opportunity for gamers of all ages to come together and have a great time while helping the American Red Cross. Double Dave's will be on hand to provide food and refreshments for attendees. Tickets to the expo are available now online. For more information, visit www.txbattlebowl.com. Urgent Fury is a longtime esports tournament organization promoting good sportsmanship in gaming. Patriot Games in Odessa is a veteran-owned small business featuring retro video games, card games, Warhammer, and more. Carlsbad Caverns presentations part of Centennial Celebration, September 25, 2023, by staff report. Two presentations at Carlsbad Caverns National Park this week are part of the park's Centennial Celebration. On Tuesday, September 26th at 1:30 p.m., come to the Visitor Center Theater for the discovery and first 50 miles of exploration in Lechuguilla Cave. The talk will focus on early history of the cave, including local native groups, ranchers, guano miners, and eventually the National Park Service, NPS. A series of lucky happenstances and hard work led explorers through a rubble pile at the bottom of a deep pit into what is now the ninth longest cave in the world, park officials said. Return to the Visitor Center Theater on Wednesday, September 27th at 1:30 p.m. for the Geology of Speleogenesis of Carlsbad Caverns. This talk provides an overview of the rocks that made up the Guadalupe Mountains and the unique conditions that led to the creation of some of the greatest caves in the world, according to NPS. This 270-million-year-old story is a tale of deep oceans and shifting rock with characters that include oil, water, and bugs, park officials said. Both talks will be led by Paul Berger, the regional hydrologist for the Alaska region of the National Park Service and former hydrologist for Carlsbad Caverns National Park. Berger has volunteered with Carlsbad Caverns since junior high and has been involved in survey, exploration, and research at the park for over 30 years. That includes working on exploration, mapping, and inventory of the Lechuguilla Cave since 1988, according to NPS.
Hello, I'm Jesse. I'm reading from the oil report of the Midland Reporter-Telegram for Saturday, September 23rd. EPA changes could double reported methane emissions. The story was written by Mella McEwen, oil editor. Oil and gas operators calculating their emissions to report to the Environmental Protection Agency are facing changes that could significantly boost the amount of methane they report. Enverus Intelligence Research, a subsidiary of the energy-focused software-as-a-service firm Enverus, has found the proposed regulations would more than double 2021 reported methane and increase overall carbon dioxide equivalent emissions by 41%. Quote, our analysis looked at the 2021 reported data, the most recent available, and we read the proposed new rules, all 600 pages, and we took the raw data and calculated emissions according to the new rules, John Gutentag, product owner with Enverus Intelligence, told the Reporter-Telegram. Gutentag noted that the analysis does not take into account what steps oil and gas operators are taking currently to reduce or eliminate emissions. Right now, he added, operators are investing in retrofitting pneumatic controllers and implementing robust leak detection and repair programs. He said the EPA is citing academic studies to support its proposed changes, which are being made to Subpart W of the Greenhouse Gas Reporting Program. He calculated that the changes would lead to an estimated 130% increase in 2021 reported methane emissions, as well as the 41% increase in overall CO2 equivalent emissions from the upstream and gathering sectors. Enverus Intelligence sees four categories driving the increase in reported methane: super emitter events, higher emission factors for equipment leaks, updates to combustion slip from engines, and lowered flaring efficiencies. These would contribute an additional 2.3 million metric tons, while total reported methane emissions in 2021 amounted to 1.9 million metric tons. The changes to Subpart W add new sources of emissions that weren't previously required to be reported, a new emissions category titled Large Emissions Events, also known as super emitters, and requiring reporting on nitrogen removal units, produced water tanks, mud degassing, crankcase venting, and combustion slip. The EPA would also move away from default emission factors in favor of site-specific measurement and more refined and accurate calculation methodologies. It also incorporates direct measurement while recognizing the importance of parametric monitoring and other engineering evaluations. The estimation methodologies for pneumatic controllers and pumps would be modified based on more recent studies and data and changes have been made to estimating reciprocating internal combustion engines and gas turbine emissions to account for crankcase venting and methane combustion slip. The proposed rule was published in the Federal Register on August 1st, starting a public comment period that ends October 2nd. After studying and incorporating the comments, the EPA will issue the final rule by August 16, 2024, with the changes taking effect with the 2025 reporting year, due March 31, 2026. Quote, "This is an intricate rule change that could increase exposure to the methane fee included in the Inflation Reduction Act that kicks in next year," Guttenberg said. "While that fee could have a significant impact on smaller operators with shallower pockets," Guttenberg said there is $1.5 billion set aside under the IRA, the Methane Emission Reduction Program, to help operators reduce emissions, report their emissions, and for technical outreach. "Half of that funding targets smaller producers," he said. Dispute rises over whether Permian wells are getting shorter. The story was written by Mella McEwen, oil editor. Is oilfield inflation prompting Permian Basin operators to drill shorter wells to blunt rising costs? The U.S. Energy Information Administration says yes, citing a decrease in the rig count for wells deeper than 15,000 feet. The agency also cited industry surveys, such as the Federal Reserve Bank of Dallas's Energy Survey, in which 60% of respondents expect higher non-labor cost inputs and 71% expect higher drilling and completion costs per well. Analysts at energy-focused software-as-a-service firm Enverus dispute the agency's contention. Mark Chapman, who leads Enverus's Oilfield Services Intelligence, commented to the Reporter Telegram by email that, quote, "No, Enverus Intelligence Research does not agree that operators are going with shorter or less intense completions to mitigate rising oil field service costs. They are continuing to look for efficiency gains to minimize the impact of rising service costs rather than smaller completions," end quote. Stephen Sogriff, Senior Vice President, Intelligence at Enverus, added, quote, "Operators that have the ability to do so are drilling longer laterals to squeeze out efficiencies. Many are attempting to work through acreage swaps or trades to enable longer lateral development at scale. Separating the Midland and Delaware basins, the trend holds up where there's been a continual increase in lateral lengths and even a slight uptick and completion intensity," end quote. The EIA, in a This Week in Petroleum article, cited the Baker Hughes rig count as categorized by well depth. Looking at data as of September 8th, the rig count for wells deeper than 15,000 feet fell 69%, or 58 rigs, from the March 13, 2020 rig count. In contrast, the EIA said the rig count for wells between 10,000 and 15,000 feet rose 2%, or 4 rigs. Quote, "This decline in 15,000-foot wells suggests a strategic change, although deeper wells produce more oil per well, thereby increasing revenue. They are also more expensive to drill," the EIA wrote. The agency also looked at the permitted depth, which indicates the total depth of the well, including vertical, directional, and horizontal portions. The permitted well depth is the depth that is reported to state authorities as the target depth of the well. Due to the variable nature of directional drilling, the permitted depth is an estimate of the final depth. Most rigs are permitted for wells between 8,000 feet to 12,999 feet. Notably, the 10,000 feet to 10,999 feet range accounts for 22.9% of the total, or 64 rigs. This distribution underscores Permian operators' inclination toward medium-depth wells that fall into the 5,000 feet to 10,000 feet or 10,000 feet to 15,000 feet categories, the EIA wrote. One of the largest cost components of a drilling program is steel piping, the EIA noted. As of July 2023, the iron and steel pipes and tubes index from the U.S. Bureau of Labor Statistics Producer Price Index, or PPI, remains significantly higher than before the COVID-19 pandemic, which, because it is one of the largest factors in drilling costs, is having a lasting effect on operator costs and drilling strategies. The PPI for drilling oil and gas wells and for support activities did not increase as significantly as it did for iron and steel pipes and tubes, which remains elevated. In contrast, the oil and gas extraction index has declined since 2022, yet it is still higher than in March 2020. Oil and gas extraction costs are operating costs and account for a smaller portion of an operator's total well expenditure, whereas drilling and support costs tend to be the most capital-intensive part of a drilling program.
High cobalt levels signify hip replacement. Dear Dr. Roach, I am having significant issues with my hip replacement that was performed 10 years ago. It can get quite painful after kneeling, lifting heavy objects, or sitting in some chairs for extended periods. My MRIs show no issues. C-reactive protein tests and sedimentation rates are within the normal range, so my doctors are not sure what is causing the pain. I was tested for heavy metals a year ago in anticipation of replacing the prosthesis. My cobalt levels were high, but not toxic. Due to unforeseen circumstances, I had to delay surgery. I was recently retested and now have a level which I understand to be toxic. My physicians don't seem to want to address this issue, but I am greatly concerned. I suggested sedation, dialysis, and even having periodic units of blood withdrawn, which were all refused. Is there anything I can do to reduce these levels and prevent damaging my cardiovascular and nervous systems? Dr. Roach answers, cobalt toxicity is not common. By far, the most common time I see elevated levels of cobalt is in people who have a hip replacement that is wearing out and failing. Very occasionally, the cobalt is high enough to cause symptoms of toxicity, such as heart or nerve symptoms, thyroid issues, smell, hearing, and taste loss, rashes, muscle weakness, and fatigue. Exactly what cobalt levels should bring concern is a topic that there seems to be uncertainty about. Some sources say that systematic symptoms are unlikely at a level below 100 mcg/L, but several well-respected authors have suggested that a level above 20 mcg/L might be enough to cause local symptoms, such as the pain you are experiencing around your hip. Your levels are unlikely to cause symptoms. Since in your case it is virtually certain that the cobalt is coming from the hip wearing out, the correct treatment is not sedation or dialysis, but removing the source of the cobalt, your prosthesis. These levels indicate it is wearing out, but are not high enough to be considered an emergency. Dear Abby, when I was in middle school, my mother made many poor decisions that culminated in her incarceration and a rather unpleasant boyfriend. Now that I have kids of my own, I feel I have more perspective on my mother's choices, and it's not a flattering picture. After she was released, she still didn't show up for any significant milestones in my or my siblings' lives. Hearing about the poor decision she continues to make gets me so upset that a phone call leaves me reeling for a couple of days, if not weeks. I have reached the point where I can no longer maintain a relationship with her, so I have gone radio silent. She has been reaching out for months, apologizing to me and begging for contact. When I get those messages, my heart drops. I know how painful it is when someone walks away, especially a family member. But I can't listen to her anymore. How can I express this to her? I want to handle this with grace, but I just want to cry. Signed, Silent Daughter in South Carolina. Dear daughter, dear Abby writes, the graceful and kinder way to deal with your mother would be to end the radio silence and tell her the truth. Explain that she has missed all the significant milestones in your life and you are unable to deal with the mess she has made of hers. This is why you prefer she no longer call or try to make contact. You can't fix her, and she can't change the past. Your mental health is important, and it is all right to move on. Dear Abby, I have been married to a man I'll call Ed for 15 years. We are seniors, but he is 17 years older than I am. I have 3 children from a previous marriage who are grown and on their own. I think my husband is gay, but never came out of the closet. He watches gay porn and once confessed to me he had a fantasy about another man. For the last 10 years, he has refused to have sex and is always making excuses like, I'm old, I'm tired, tomorrow. Abby, I crave love and intimacy. Ed is cold, distant, and a loner. He refuses to travel or do anything for fun. He's well off financially, never had kids, and is a good provider. However, that is all he does. I want to leave him, but I feel guilty because of his age and because he has been a responsible provider over the years. I love him as a person, but not as a husband. Please advise. Signed, Depressed and Stuck in Pennsylvania. Dear Depressed and Stuck, there is more to marriage than sex. There is supposed to be communication, affection, mutual respect, understanding, and compassion for each other. From what you have written, you have none of these. Address this with Ed before you freeze to death. Ask him if marriage counseling would help him to better understand your needs. If he refuses and all you get out of this marriage is access to his money, make an appointment with an attorney to discuss what your rights may be in the equitable distribution state of Pennsylvania after a 15-year marriage. After that, you will have a better idea of what to do.
Thank you for joining us for the readings of the Midland Reporter-Telegram and the Odessa American. This is the Recording Library of West Texas, enriching the lives of individuals with physical, visual, and learning disabilities since 1963. You can hear this program on Recording Library of West Texas Radio and on demand with your computer or favorite mobile device at recordinglibrary.org.